Greetings. Welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I am Bill Grant, co-chair of the club's Health and Medicine Member-Led Forum and chair of this program. It is my pleasure today to introduce Dr. Steve Blake, who will present a program on migraine headaches. Steve Blake is a clinical research scientist. He is faculty nutritional biochemist at Hawaii Pacific Neuroscience. He has offered many classes at the University of Hawaii. Dr. Blake, with science doctorate, is the author of the McGraw-Hill College textbook, Vitamins and Minerals Demystified. He is, has run a clinical trial on Alzheimer's disease. Steve?
Aloha, I'm from Maui. And thanks for coming today. Well, today's talk, as you know, is about migraine headaches. And my approach is a little different than a medical doctor because I'm going to be talking about all the different ways that you can lower the frequency of migraines and the intensity of migraines. I'm going to look at things that are not pharmacological and things that are not profitable, but things that help. I'll talk a little bit about how migraines happen. It's not completely understood, the progression of how a migraine happens from the trigger, you know, through the prodrome and the aura and the migraine itself and then the postdrome. But I'll tell you a little bit about that, but not too much because it gets a little bit technical too. Prevention's the big thing. Preventing all diseases is really what I love to do, but preventing migraines, I think, is what everyone in this room is looking for. And it just most neurologists have 15 minutes, and they don't have enough time to talk about prevention. So I'm going to talk about lots of triggers, from odors and foods and sounds and lights and missing meals and all the possible things. Migraine headache triggers are very personal. They're different for everyone. So you have to figure out your own triggers, and it's kind of a Sherlock Holmes thing to do that. Everything I'm going to talk about today is going to be safe. There are no bad side effects from anything that I will mention. And that makes me feel very good because I know a lot of the doctors I work with prescribe medication that can have side effects from mild to dead. And I don't do any of that. So I'll caution you if there's any chance of any bad side effects on it. I also want to mention that everything I'll talk about today is from peer-reviewed scientific literature, medical studies, and none of it's from Google or Facebook or the other sources of information that are commonly used. Now, I wanted to kind of quantize how much could you, if everything worked, these top five things, if they all worked for you, how much could you lower your incidence of a migraine? If you got three a week and all of these five worked for you, you could get it down to one every other month. Doesn't that sound better? Of course, everything here might not work for you, but at least it gives you the idea. And these are just the ones that had specific numbers attached to them on how far they would lower your migraines. There's lots of other things I'll talk about, and I have a book. Bill's got it. It's behind me. I have a book on migraines that has more on everything I'll talk about today. We just have a few copies. So I'll talk about histamine. Anyone ever heard of histamine? Yes, it's, of course, we all know it as an inflammatory component in our bodies, but also it's found in foods, and I'll tell you which ones. Ginger powder resulted in 44% migraine-free. The other 56% had reduced pain. Worked as well as sumatriptan as a treatment for migraine pain, not as a preventive, but as a treatment. Vitamin B2, there's no upper limit. It's completely safe, and 59% of patients cut their migraines in half. Most of the tests use a migraine scoring system that scores frequency and intensity together. So when they say in half, that means both of them cut down. Coenzyme Q10, another very safe, normally made in our bodies, and if you take statins, that might reduce their production by 40%. Coenzyme Q10, we used in the Alzheimer's trial that just finished that I wrote and conducted on Oahu. Butterbur is a plant that's been used for migraines. Now, it can be contaminated with pyrrolizidine alkaloids, which is very hard to say, and not good for you either. So you need to look for, if you're going to try that one, the PA-free or pyrrolizidine-free butterbur. But in that, I'll show you studies on all of these things, and the studies are looking good on that. Did you know 76% of migraineurs respond to perfume? I got an Uber ride over here, and a lady who got in had really strong perfume. I was thinking, I'm glad I don't get migraines from perfume because that would be a trigger. There's other odors I'll talk about today, too. Skip meals are a big deal for migraines. You want to really keep your meals on a steady basis and think ahead, because the problem is that when you're low in blood sugar, your brain doesn't work very well. So carrying snacks and planning ahead is a real key to that. Interesting that obesity, no one in this room is obese, but if you know someone with a migraine who is, can reduce incidence 5 times. 5.56 is the odds ratio for people who are overweight as compared to normal weight. That's a big one. Learning your own trigger foods is the key. They're going to be different for everyone. Good sleep and skip meals are two essential things that are common to almost all migraineurs. Ginger root tea, taken if you get pain, and skullcap has some interesting constituents that lower excitability in the brain. And sometimes doctors use anti-epileptic drugs as a preventive measure for migraines, but they have a lot of side effects. And so it's possible that people can use skullcap or even passionflower with similar components but much safer, and seemingly without side effects except for drowsiness if you take too much. Excitation in general of your brain is what tends to trigger migraines. So keeping brains calm is a challenge in our society for sure, but something to work on. Stress reduction really helps. I'll mention Feverfew and Butterbur. I'll show you studies on magnesium, vitamin B2, riboflavin, and coenzyme Q10. Also, alpha-lipoic acid, which isn't officially a vitamin, but could almost be one. It's very safe, natural substance. And has anyone ever tried Tiger Balm for a headache? Rub it on your temples? How's that work? Good. And exercise helps, too. Keep those blood vessels in good shape. Migraines can affect half the head. Some people get it all over the head. And it kind of, this talk is about real migraines, although if you have other headaches, say from traumatic brain injury, can induce real migraines, or just regular headaches, a lot of what I talk about will be applicable, but the talk's really about real migraines. Nausea or even vomiting can accompany a migraine. Sensitivity to light and a throbbing, pounding headache that makes you not want to move are signs of a real migraine, and just the kind of signs that we don't want to have. The migraine aura, here, you see it scintillating there. This is an artist's conception of a migraine aura. I'm going to move this slide out so as I don't want to trigger anyone's migraine. But it's very hard to picture that. If you've never seen it, the aura can be visual or auditory. It can be a smell or just sort of a feeling. About one-third of migraine sufferers get auras. But in a sense, everyone does, but some people don't feel it. So that's the difference. 37 million Americans are affected. And women get about 3 times as many migraines as men. It's not just about hormones, but 18% of American women get migraines, whereas only 6% of American men do. It has to do with estrogen, and I'll mention that as we go along. The trigeminal nerves here in the face are involved with migraines. And so that's where a lot of the pain is perceived. And we want to get ahead of that and make it so we don't perceive pain in our heads at all. Genes can double the risk of a migraine, but it seems that there's more to it. And the siren going by reminds me that flashing lights and sirens can trigger migraines too. Now, this is the only slide on drugs. I'll just mention a few. basically, neurologists treat migraines with drugs. Ibuprofen, acetaminophen, caffeine are all commonly used drugs for this. Ibuprofen can cause stomach ulcers or intestinal perforation. Acetaminophen can be a problem with liver damage in quantities enough to really relieve pain. Botox injections are very popular. I know that our migraine specialist gives Botox injections all day long. It's extremely expensive, did you know? Botulism toxin injections. And there are dangers to it. But if that's the only way to knock your migraines down, then that's something to consider. Being of a natural bent, I'd love it if you tried everything I said before having to resort to that. But if you have to, that's a possibility to consider and check with your neurologist about that. Now, triptan, sumatriptan is the commonest one. This is a treatment during the migraine or just before the migraine pain really hits. And I'm going to tell you about an alternative that's a lot safer and seems to work just as well. Of course, any medication changes should be discussed with your neurologist. And if your neurologist knows that ginger is as effective as sumatriptan, well, I'd be very surprised. Ours didn't. He just doesn't read about things that aren't pharmaceuticals. Ergotamine constricts blood vessels, so do triptans. And part of their side effect problems with heart attacks and strokes is that the blood vessels are constricted. So if you can find an alternative, take less of these drugs, that would be my goal. You're probably still going to need pain medication at those times when you're really in pain, and I'm totally for that. But if you can succeed, you can measure your success in how much less pain medication you need, say, during a month. And if that bottle's still full, you'll save a lot of money, save some side effects, too. As I mentioned, some anticonvulsant epileptic drugs are used as a preventive medication. A lot of people have side effects they don't like with those. This is a pretty picture from Mexico to relax everyone so no one gets stressed during the lecture. Migraine triggers. Triggers are tricky because something like red wine that might trigger a migraine one time might not trigger a migraine another time. So you have to kind of look at several triggers causing that to happen. Say red wine, skipped meals, and job stress might be three triggers for a person. But one of them, just the job stress, might not trigger a migraine unless they had some red wine and maybe skipped a meal, and then that would trigger. So that makes it harder for you to figure out which things might trigger a migraine. I made up this little graph here, and let's see if I can. So this is the electrical potential of a nerve cell, and minus 70 is where it's resting. And this would be like on a light switch with it fully off. Okay, if you get to this point, the threshold of excitation, that's about in the middle of the light switch where the light goes on, where the migraine goes on. We want to keep below that. So perhaps you skip a meal, and that would raise your level of excitation a little bit, but not up to the level of really triggering the nerve. And then maybe you had some red wine, and that raised it up almost to the point where it's going to trigger. But then you had a neck rub. And you relaxed a little bit, and all your brain cells calm down a little bit. And then your boss yells at you, and it goes over the threshold, and then the nerve triggers. This is why we'd like to keep people not so stressed out. And there's a lot of balances nutritionally in the body, too, that affect this. I'll talk a little bit about how migraines happen. If the brain cells become prone to excitability, as you saw from the graph, then they're more likely to trigger. And usually during the aura or just before the aura, there's a simultaneous domino effect of triggering of brain cells that goes through the brain. It's called spreading cortical depression. I think spreading cortical depolarization would be a more accurate term. When the brain cells trigger like that, too many trigger, they get starved of nutrients that are needed to keep the blood vessels open. Nerve cells open blood vessels to get blood to themselves unless they're tired out and there are too many of them triggered, and then they don't. So the first step of a migraine is this constricting of the blood vessels caused by the spreading cortical depolarization, caused by stress and lack of magnesium and several other things that I'll talk about as we go along here. There's an exciting neurotransmitter, glutamate, and a relaxing neurotransmitter, gamma-aminobutyric acid. GABA is easier to say. So what we want to do is keep the brain cells' excitability down, make sure we have enough magnesium also to not trigger that. This domino triggering of nerve cells can lead to leaky arteries, and then you get neuropeptides, which cause inflammation, and that's where the pain starts coming in. That's why there's a delay between the aura and the migraine, and that delay can be variable from a few minutes to a few hours. I didn't put in all the long names of the neuropeptides here, but enough to say this is kind of how it happens as we go along. Menstrual migraines, estrogen is protective against migraines. So it's protective during much of the cycle on the graph up there, but when estrogen drops, it can trigger a migraine. So as part of your figuring out when you get migraines, if it's a monthly migraine and it happens at a certain point in your cycle, that would be a time to be especially careful of your triggers around that time. And so you can be, you know, very cautious about that. Some women during menopause find their migraines go away. And but that's, you know, might be a long ways away. So meanwhile, we've got to help. It seems that, again, magnesium really helps with that, either through food. It's tricky with nutrition because people who get more magnesium are probably getting it from green leafy vegetables, which have so many other excellent nutrients. So it may not just be the magnesium. It might be the green leafy vegetables. Here's another very calming picture. Make sure that no one's getting their brain cells triggered. Okay, how to do it. I'm going to mostly talk about diet and supplements today, but sleeping well, regular sleep is crucial. Stress management is crucial, and that's a whole other topic. I do have a good chapter in my book, Healing Medicine, on stress management that I think we have two copies on the table. Regular aerobic exercise. With aerobic exercise, you need to start gradually and increment gradually so that you don't get in trouble. So, you know, if you have clearance from, you know, your doctor that your heart's in good shape and your lungs and your blood circulation, you can start very slowly moving up to an aerobic exercise program. Pain medications are going to be part of your arsenal. We'd like to keep them in the medicine cabinet as much as possible. Now, there's non-food triggers for migraines. Cigarette smoke is a big one. Now no one smokes inside restaurants or bars in San Francisco, so you have to hold your breath as you walk by the outside of these places where people are smoking. If that's a trigger for you, then you'll need to learn to avoid that. Loud noise can be, like sirens, and brighter flickering lights can be. Wraparound sunglasses with polarization can really help people not get triggered on a freeway with bumper flashes and windshield flashes. So that's an easy fix. Stress and anxiety, that's a harder fix. Don't watch the news. That's my advice. Skip meals are huge. People are saying that, you know, they can't even really have a blood test because if they, you know, wait 24 hours to get a blood test, they get a migraine. And so be sure to make sure that you're properly nourished. Carry snacks. You know, make sure that you don't skip any meals. And that could lower your incidence of migraines by 50% or more, just that one thing. And surprisingly enough, paradoxically, medications, a long list of them, increase migraine frequency and severity, including some of them used for migraines. Odors, I mentioned perfume, also paint, cigarettes, gasoline, and bleach. So I don't know if there are any non-self-serve gas stations left in the world, but good idea to avoid those if they're triggers for you. And so for some people in this room, gasoline may be a trigger, and others it may not. Not healthy anyway. Skip meals, 50% less migraines if you didn't skip meals. So there you can cut it in half. If you get two a week, you might get one a week if you really keep track of your meals. We're thinking that the mechanism involves cortisol, a stress hormone. And other stress hormones, of course, are involved too. So that's one thing to work out. I mentioned obesity, 5 times the odds of migraines if you're obese. Dietary triggers are tricky. With the odors, usually you react within 20 minutes or an hour, but the dietary triggers can take a day or 2 days to actually combine and trigger a migraine. So you have to be very careful. I'll give you a quick example of a migraine diary. You want to track down what it is, and I'll give you lots of ideas that you can look at for that. Elimination diets are one way to go. Elimination diets are where you eliminate certain foods and then see if your migraines get a lot less or even go away. Common dietary triggers, alcohol, especially red wine, chocolate, cheese, caffeine, and MSG, famous in Chinese restaurants, but used a lot of other places. MSG, as monosodium glutamate, the glutamate's very similar to that brain neurotransmitter that's very exciting. Dehydration is something to look at. People just don't drink enough. Okay, I avoided that one for the moment. But that is something to check. 31 to 54% of migraineurs get triggered by dehydration. So it's something very easy to do, is to keep track of your hydration as well as skip meals. You notice how the things that I'm talking about are completely non-profitable, and they're almost ignored by the business of medicine. As effective as some very powerful drugs. So for me, that's really fun. Dairy products were a small trigger, but ice cream in children, 55% responded with migraines. So if you have pediatric migraine, I know one person in here has a child with migraines, you might want to watch out for ice cream. And would be interesting to see if almond or soy-based ice cream also triggered the headache or not, in which case the kid could still have ice cream if that was the case. I'll talk more about nitrates, but hot dogs, red meats, fatty foods can be triggers, and aspartame and other artificial sweeteners. And this is just a quick example of a migraine diary. You can make it up yourself. You can use your cell phone or smartphone to organize this. But if you do get a migraine and you've been keeping a diary, you may be able to track back what things you were doing in what combination that caused that migraine. Don't repeat it. And maybe don't repeat the migraine. Elimination diets. This is from a study. I have the citation listed, and there were 2 studies here. They took 99 children, and they put them on an elimination diet, and that would be milk, eggs, food additives, cheese, beer, and red meat. I don't know how many children drink beer, but whatever. 93% had complete or great improvement in their migraines. And what's interesting is they re-challenged the kids afterwards, let them eat all this stuff, and almost everyone went back to the same high number of migraines. So this list right here might or might not help you tremendously, and it does cost nothing. You could try it for a week or a month and see if your migraine frequency goes down. This was a real interesting study. It was a vegan elimination diet, and this is a radical diet. Eliminate wheat, corn, soy, peanuts, citrus, all animal products, bananas, potatoes, nuts, chocolate, tea, alcohol. It sounds like you can't eat anything, but there's actually a list of things you can eat too. Extremely restrictive diet. So it was a crossover trial. So first they took group A, and they put them on this elimination diet, and group B stayed the same, but the change was dramatic. They got better on the elimination diet, and they didn't on the other diet. Well, when it came time to cross over, the patients rebelled. They wouldn't do it. They stayed on this ridiculous diet because it cut their migraines down by like 90%. So the trial had to be halted, but they still published it because the results were so stunning. So that is a long list, and I think the key with elimination diets is perhaps try 5 at a time and eliminate them for, say, a month, but you can go back to eating them if they didn't make any difference. Or if they did make a difference, then you can eliminate, you know, 1 of the 5 until you find out what's doing it. Histamine is one of the possible culprits. in this trial reported in the headache journal Cephalalgia, a recent study, 68% of the participants had a 50% or greater reduction in their migraine headaches just by restricting histamine. So in the next slide, I will quantify what has histamine in it. Let's see. Cheese, sardines, cheese, fish, champagne, cheese, salami, sausage, herrings, parmesan. Looks like cheese and fish, doesn't it? Pretty much. So cheese and fish could easily be one of the things that are triggering you. And that histamine, remember, 68%, over two-thirds of the people in this trial, cut their migraines down by 50%. So if you can do that by just avoiding a few foods, I don't need anything in this list anyway. But some of you probably do, and so you have some potentials for knocking your migraines back. Tyramine's another one. Tyramine can be a trigger, and it comes with aging, like an aged cheese, or cured meats like bacon, smoked fish, beer is fermented, any other fermented foods. So tyramine can trigger migraines too, and does. And you can, yes, you can avoid it.
Is fermented foods like pickled foods as well?
No, pickled's a little different. I haven't seen pickled foods with tyramine in them. Aspartame's one. Now, reading their literature, I realized that you really had to drink about 7 bottles of diet soda to get enough aspartame to typically trigger a migraine. But that's not that unusual either. There are people who drink a 6-pack a day of these things. So you might want to see if aspartame is a trigger. A lot of people add it to coffee. It's a common sweetener. And if it's not a trigger, you can continue. But if it is, a lot of different neurologic disorders have been attributed to aspartame. And the research is very conflicting because you have studies sponsored by the makers of aspartame that make it look really good, and studies not funded by the makers of aspartame that make it look pretty scary. So that the problem is it okay for you? That's all we really need to know. And MSG, I mentioned Chinese food can have it, and there's a lot of different ways. I think I have a list here of different things to look at labels that have MSG. Hydrolyzed vegetable protein, it sounds pretty safe, but it's another way to say MSG. Autolyzed yeast, sodium caseinate, yeast extract, texturized protein, calcium caseinate. Calcium caseinate's in a lot of foods. So you might want to read labels and find out if any of these forms of MSG are triggers for you. Again, triggering overexcitation of the brain, getting you closer to the threshold to getting a migraine. Nitrates in hot dogs. Actually, you know, meat, dead animals are gray. They look like roadkill, and nobody wants to buy roadkill. So they dye them red with sodium nitrate or sodium nitrite, and they can cause cancer, causing nitrosamines and other problems too. In fact, one of the most stunning research articles I read is that hot dogs raise the risk of leukemia in children by 9 times, a 900% increase. Stunning that people would feed their kids that after that research came out. So you need this in the food to prevent botulism and to preserve the food and to make it look good. But on the other hand, you may react to that if you do look for sodium nitrite or nitrate or potassium nitrite or nitrate. And the mechanism may be with nitric acid vasoconstriction and vasodilation. Nitric acid causes the opening of the blood vessels. And during a migraine, that would not be a good thing. They're already too open, and the neuropeptides are causing the pain. So I made a little chart, and you can see that there are red meat, for instance, has histamine, tyramine, and nitrates. Cheese has histamine and tyramine. Alcohol, some has histamine, tyramine. There's also sulfites I didn't mention but are commonly found in red wine, could be a problem, and in dried fruit. It's in the book. It's not in the slideshow, but dried fruit can be a trigger too. If you look for an unsulfurated health food dried fruit that doesn't look good but doesn't give you migraines, so that might be a good thing. There is the red wine that can trigger it. The hangover from red wine can trigger it, or the red wine itself. You might try freshly juiced grapes as an alternative. And because a lot of the fermentation products are what are causing the migraine triggers, if freshly juiced grape juice is incredibly delicious, and you, but of course, it makes you high in a different way than wine.
You are listening to the Commonwealth Club of California. Listen to thousands of our podcasts on iTunes or Google Play. And when you're in the Bay Area, please join us live for one of our 450 programs each year. You can find us online at commonwealthclub.org. And now, back to our program.
Caffeine can trigger or help migraines. Now, during the initial stage of a migraine where your vessels are too constricted, it can cause a worse migraine or trigger one. But during the later stages where your blood vessels in your brain are too open, the caffeine can tighten it up a little bit. And it's found, you know, in Excedrin and many over-the-counter products, and, of course, at Starbucks and many other coffee houses, real easy to find caffeine in both drugs and beverages. Oh, you get a nice, peaceful picture again. This is Flat Rock Pool, and I'll be back there in 2 days. Right near my home in Maui. We live, my wife and I, Catherine, live on an organic farm in Maui. And we've been away for about 5 weeks, and we're ready to get home. So now some solutions. This one's really fun. This study was done, and they compared sumatriptan for migraine pain during a migraine headache with ginger, 250 milligrams, a quarter teaspoon of ginger. You know how much that costs? 5 cents, maybe. And they work the same. The graph at the top shows sumatriptan and ginger, and that's a headache rating scale. And over time, the same timing and the same relief from the headaches. And since sumatriptan is usually taken symptomatically for relief of pain, you could discuss with your doctor if he would allow you to try the ginger instead. And since it takes effect just about the same speed and potency as sumatriptan, you know what to expect. It's also very helpful with nausea. And nausea is one of the problems with migraine. Ginger is widely used for nausea by, you know, sailors and people who experience that. Side effects from sumatriptan can be mild, all the way up to death from heart attacks and strokes because of the vessel constrictive nature of it. It's also anti-inflammatory, which can help it not cause those problems. But side effects of ginger are all very, very positive. It can help with blood sugars, blood pressure, and blood fats. And the price is good. How does it affect it? One of the neuropeptides is called calcitonin gene-related peptide, and it seems to reduce that. And that's one of the main causes of inflammation in the brain that can be the part of that migraine pain that really hurts. Now, this is from a cell culture test. Generally, I only look at clinical trials of people using things so I know if they work for real migraineurs. But in this case, I wanted to see exactly how it worked, so I looked at a cell culture test that allowed that to happen. Another thing that ginger does is it reduces leukotrienes, which are inflammatory-causing eicosanoids. And these eicosanoids are from basically the arachidonic acid in poultry products. Turkey, chicken, and eggs are the highest that cause inflammation. And so by altering your intake of poultry products, you might be able to lower inflammation enough to where you don't even need the ginger. Magnesium is widely used for migraines. It's what can I say? Everybody should get enough magnesium every day. The RDA for a lot of people is about 1,000 milligrams, and a lot of Americans get very little. When analyzing the Atkins diet, for instance, there was almost none, and almost no calcium either. Diets vary, but green leafy vegetables, nuts and seeds, and beans have a lot of magnesium. One point, white flour, when it's made from whole grains, they remove 86% of the magnesium. So white flour products might not be the optimal grain for people with migraines because they're so depleted of this magnesium. Double-blind placebo-controlled trials have shown that oral magnesium supplementation is effective in headache prevention. prevention is the key here, and so taking magnesium on a regular basis would be a key. Now, there are many different forms of magnesium. As Bill Grant mentioned, I wrote a college textbook for McGraw-Hill on vitamins and minerals, and in it I outline the different supplement forms. Some are absorbable. The magnesium oxide, you might as well just eat rocks. It's very low absorption. There are other forms that I have in my Brain and Body Food supplement. I put in a form of magnesium that actually absorbs. Why not? Here's some magnesium sources for you. Green leafy vegetables like spinach, sunflower seeds, and peanut butter. Delicious ways to get your magnesium. But you notice if you ate one serving of each of these, you'd still only get maybe a third of your daily magnesium. So I tend to take the supplementary form as well as trying to eat very well too. Vitamin D reduced migraines. In this study, they used 7,000 IUs of vitamin D, a bit over the 4,000 upper limit per day. I don't consider 7,000 IUs a dangerous amount at all. I think they're going to change the upper limit soon. But it did give them, migraines went from 7 per month to 6 per month, and the duration of the migraines was reduced. So one thing you can do is make sure when you get your blood test, get vitamin D checked, and if it's low, take supplementary. I was raised in San Francisco, so I know if you live here, your sun exposure is minimal. Fog exposure is maximal. Omega-3s in migraines are very important. I mentioned those leukotrienes, those inflammatory components. They're inflammatory if they're made from omega-6. This study, they looked at reducing omega-6 fats and increasing omega-3 fats, and when they did both, they had less migraines. So it's important now. I'll tell you some sources, but I wanted to show you this graphic. Turkey, chicken, and eggs contain arachidonic acid. And the whole purpose of aspirin or Advil or many of the pain pills is to stop the lipoxygenase enzymes from making the leukotrienes and the painful prostaglandins. Or you could short-circuit it by not eating the arachidonic acid in the first place. Your body will make all it needs, and it's very easy for our bodies to make. And then flax seeds have omega-3, also chia seeds, walnuts, and many other foods have the omega-3s that you can take. There's whole lots of talk about with fats and oils. I do have a book on fats and oils. I call it my fat book because it's really fat, so I only sell it online. It's too big to print. But if you want to know all about saturated fats and trans fats and inflammatory fats, you can get that book online on my website, drsteveblake.com. Oh, okay. So you can just eat the plant-based ones. Fish oil's a whole nother topic, but it might not be a bad idea to take the algae-based EPA or DHA rather than the fish-based because of pollution problems. And, of course, walnuts and flax seeds can really provide a lot of omega-3s. If you're well enough nourished, they'll provide enough. Oh, here's our sailboat Sojourn, and my wife and I just went on a sojourn on Sojourn. Energy production is crucial to migraines. And there are little energy factories in our body called mitochondria, and they produce our aerobic energy. And there's a reduction in energy production between migraine headaches. And energy production is very important. When I mentioned about the spreading cortical depression, there's actually a reduction in energy so much that your body can't open the blood vessels, and the constricted brain blood vessels are one of the precipitators of the migraine. Several supplements I'll mention that increase energy production in a good way and are very safe. Riboflavin, which is vitamin B2, coenzyme Q10, and alpha-lipoic acid. Riboflavin, 50% reduction of attacks in 59% of patients in a clinical trial. There's many trials of riboflavin. It's widely recommended. I hope everyone in this room is supplementing with riboflavin. There's no upper limit. It's perfectly safe. In this trial, they used 400 milligrams of riboflavin per day. You may not need so much, but I think it's a good idea since it is completely safe and may actually lower your incidence of migraines by 50%. Wouldn't that be nice? It's essential for brain cell membrane stability as well as energy production. Oh, I did leave this in.
Our specialist in migraines, who's a neurologist at Hawaii Pacific Neuroscience, asked me why vitamin B2 worked. And I looked in my own book, cited below. It plays a vital role in the elimination of toxins and drugs. We know a lot of these toxins and drugs can help create migraines. And it's needed to recharge antioxidants, which protect our brain cells, to make energy, of course. And one of the signs of reduced riboflavin is brain membrane inflammation. So if you get enough, that may reduce the brain membrane inflammation, which is an integral part of migraine headaches. Coenzyme Q10 is naturally made in the human body by every cell. It's called ubiquinone because every cell makes it, unless you're taking statin drugs. How many people in this room do not take statin drugs? Okay, that's pretty good. About half the people in the room do not. For people who do take statin drugs, about 40% of your production of coenzyme Q10 may be damaged. And my wife likes me to say the long name for it. So it's a hydroxyglutaryl coenzyme A reductase inhibitor. And this prevents the formation of farnesyl. And that prevents, through a chain reaction, the production in the body of both cholesterol and coenzyme Q10. And since coenzyme Q10 is crucial for energy, the Krebs cycle won't work without it. Your mitochondria cannot produce energy without it. It's part of the electron transport chain. So you really need it, and hence why sometimes statins cause muscle fatigue problems. Sometimes they don't. But coenzyme Q10 is also the only fat-soluble antioxidant made in the human body, really crucial for cell membrane protection. So it might not be a bad idea to take it. This study only used 150 milligrams a day. In our Alzheimer's trial, we used 200, and very safe. 61% of the people had a 50% reduction in migraine days with a completely safe nutrient that normally is made in our bodies and is cheap. You can buy it at drugstores over the counter because it is so safe. Unfortunately, no profit in it. Supplementation was effective in the first month of therapy and can help with pediatric migraine as well. I think it's interesting that the American Academy of Neurology concluded that coenzyme Q10 is possibly effective for migraine prevention in adults. What's amazing about that is they are funded almost exclusively, yes, I have checked, by the pharmaceutical industry, and there's absolutely no profit in coenzyme Q10. So I was amazed that they would endorse this, and I applaud them for doing so. Alpha-lipoic acid is almost a B vitamin. It's an antioxidant. It helps to recharge glutathione. And in a test, it reduced frequency, headache days, and headache severity in a treatment group. It helps with oxygen production and helps stop oxygen problems. Now we'll get to a couple of plants. I'm just going to mention a couple plants today. Feverfew has been used for centuries for headaches. And it could be that the parthenolides are what's causing the reduction in headaches. They reduce platelet aggregation and serotonin release. I didn't mention this as part of the cycle of a migraine because it's starting to get technical. But it may have enough anti-inflammatory action, and that may be due to the fact that it a lot of the inflammation in the body is because there's this enzyme, phospholipase A, and that runs to the cell membranes where it pulls off a phospholipid, takes out arachidonic acid, remember that one, and makes an inflammatory component out of it. Well, this reduces that, the feverfew, so you get less inflammation and less pain. Really not a bad idea. Feverfew also was endorsed by the American Academy of Neurology. In another study, a multi-center, double-blind, placebo-controlled study, that's gold-plated medical study, they're using 6 milligrams of feverfew 3 times a day. They use this extract called MIG-99. Statistically significant reduction in migraine frequency. So this is used as a preventive. And since it seems to be safe by all the studies I've seen, then for prevention, you're going to take something, for the rest of your life. You want it to be very, very safe. Now, butterbur has to be free of the pyrrolizidine alkaloids. It should say PA-free on the label. And if it is, it may really help with migraines. It helps with the inflammation in migraines. randomized double-blind placebo-controlled trial using 50 milligrams of butterbur, that was PA-free, twice daily, had a significant number of migraine attacks, reduction in migraine attacks and migraine days per month. I didn't get numbers out of these trials. It was a little bit difficult to know exactly, but it was about a 50% reduction again. So now I've given you probably 8 ways to reduce migraine frequency and severity by 50%, and I sure hope they all work for you. Wouldn't that be nice? Oh, this one was 100 children and adolescents with migraines. 77% of all patients did report a reduction of frequency, at least 50%. So that's the highest that I've seen. Over 3/4 of the participants had a 50% or greater reduction in their migraine. And greater sounds good to me, too. Well-tolerated and no serious adverse effects. Again, needs to be PA-free. We'll have questions in just a couple of minutes. But remember that question, okay? Now, for quick relief, we sometimes use Tiger Balm because when you're getting a headache, it's nice to have something that'll work within a couple of seconds. And you can rub it on your temples. Don't get it in your eyes or they'll sting. And it seems to just, it's not a huge thing. It's a small, helpful thing that you can keep around and, you know, have handy in your purse. It's very inexpensive. Another thing that we like to use for headaches is a vitamin C drink. You've probably seen these fizzy drinks. They have them at most of the pharmacies now have them in all the health food stores. It's an ascorbated form of vitamin C, about 1,000 milligrams per packet, with various flavors. Some, I think the flavors are overdone, but this super orange, one of my favorites. And you can take this to help stave off a headache. It's only good for you. And if this helps, well, there's something that's good for you in other ways that also reduces your headache pain. You can make it yourself. My wife and I often make it at home because, really, I don't like the flavor that they put in it. So if you take 1/4 teaspoon of ascorbic acid crystals and 1/8 teaspoon of baking soda, extremely inexpensive to make this, makes about 1 gram or 1,000 milligrams of ascorbated vitamin C. So those are some ideas. Now I'm going to wrap it up for you and let you know some of the things I've talked about, what you can do. It's just an hour. I couldn't cover everything possible, but I think I gave you enough to stuff your brains pretty well today. Good. I see nodding. So you want to avoid your trigger foods and odors. Learn them. Track them down. Your neurologist is not going to be able to do this tracking and find out for you what's triggering you. You have to do it. And if there's food changes, you have to make the food changes too. Good sleep and no-skip meals can reduce your migraine frequency dramatically. Ginger tea, ginger root tea, or ginger capsules as an actual pain assistance during a migraine attack and for nausea as well. Also helps with a pounding headache because it tends to constrict the blood vessels, just like sumatriptan. So in all ways, it helps. I haven't heard that it helps with light sensitivity, but that's what dark glasses are good for. Reduce overall excitation of your brain in all the ways. Perhaps caffeine is not a great idea every day. Maybe you could drink chamomile tea instead and see those stress levels reduce a little bit. I mentioned feverfew and butterbur, the special butterbur without the PAs. Magnesium, vitamin B2, and coenzyme Q10 all have dramatic effects on lowering the frequency and intensity of migraine attacks. They're all very, very safe. They're all available easily and cheap. Alpha-lipoic acid, Tiger Balm, and vitamin C are some possibilities, and regular aerobic exercise. Now, I would really love to hear from any of you. There's my email address and my website. And please, if you have questions, if I can help, let me know. And if you have questions right now, Dr. Grant has the microphone.
Thank you, Steve. Questions?
Hello, sir. Thank you very much for that talk. I've been reading a little bit about a ketogenic diet, which, of course, tends to be high fat and low protein and low carbs. And there appears to be evidence that suggests that that diet reduces migraine, that feeding the brain ketones instead of glucose reduces migraines. Do you have a point of view on that?
I sure do. I've analyzed diets. I have a software program in the back there called the Diet Doctor. And what I do is I take these diets like the Bulletproof Diet or the Atkins Diet or a lot of the ketogenic diets, and I analyze them. And I see, how does this match the human needs for nutrition? Oh, terrible. Terrible. For instance, magnesium and calcium levels are extremely low. Many of the vitamins are extremely low. And our bodies are really designed to burn carbohydrates, slow-releasing carbohydrates, whole natural carbohydrates, you know, as opposed to junk food and white flour and all that. The temporary relief may be due to reduction in excitability of the brain. In pediatric epilepsy, if they're refractory to more than three drugs tried, they will try this ketogenic diet. But it's so much fat. It's like the kids are eating sticks of butter. And it's just, the kids can't take it. And it's so bad for their health. And it leads to, of course, problems with strokes, heart attacks, diabetes, that it's not a sustainable diet at all. So I encourage you to analyze any diet you're going to try and see if it gives you the nutrients that the human body needs. And if it doesn't, well, then it's not an adequate diet. Thank you. I know it's very popular, paleo and all that.
In terms of administering any of these, do they have conflicts with medications at all that you're taking if you're on any of those drugs? And then the ginger powder, how do you normally, just with water, mix it with water or tea?
Yeah, it's just swallowed as a small capsule, like I say, 250 milligram capsules of ginger root powder. As far as interfering with drugs, the ginger probably would not. I wouldn't take both sumatriptan and ginger because they do the same thing. If you're going to be taking skullcap herb as a steady measure in order to reduce excitability of your brain, then you wouldn't want that to do the same thing as anti-epileptic drugs that you're taking for the same purpose. They both work on the benzodiazepine receptors in the very same way, but what's nice about the skullcap is it doesn't seem to have the side effects that are so bothersome with people who do take those. And I know for migraine, you take a small dose, but for epilepsy, people are taking a large dose, and they're basically, you know, vampires. I mean, the walking dead. I mean, just really zombified. And so you want to, you know, hopefully work toward a safer solution. None of what I talked about today has side effects. They've all been checked in large studies, and I look at what's excluded in the studies and not. And there's no problem with blood thinners. I mean, you could go into this in great depth. You could ask a knowledgeable pharmacist or perhaps a very knowledgeable physician to check your supplements against side effects, but generally they don't study this type of thing so much. You could also look on Google Scholar or PubMed and get some serious information if you don't mind some medical doublespeak.
Could you talk about ophthalmic migraines? There was no pain. It's just like a light in the center of my eye, and then it tend to move. And if there was any trigger, I was watching the countdown for Hillary Clinton to get it. That's what happened. But I never heard of that before.
That's called a politically mediated headache. Yeah, the ophthalmic migraine is basically an aura without a migraine. And I think that's a very good thing. And that can happen where people get auras. In fact, people who take Botox injections often still get the aura, but don't get the migraine. They find the aura is bothersome, but how nice not to get the pain and nausea and light sensitivity and the throbbing. So be glad that's all you got. I think a lot of this, the spreading cortical depression, all applies to that, and you can reduce that the same way as a regular migraine.
I get these aura migraines triggered by either coffee or tea or chocolate, but it doesn't ever progresses to a painful migraine.
Oh, good.
Hi. My name is Monica. So I wanted to ask about, I recently saw something online, Migraine Stop. Have you heard of that supplement where it has a numerous amount of like vitamins? It's all natural. So I've been curious about that because I've been kind of like thinking about maybe I should look into that. So
I've looked at a lot of the different migraine products, and if you want to just email me with a picture of the label that's readable, I'd be happy to give you my opinion. Generally, I find those products are made by people, by companies who want to make a lot of money and put in the cheapest possible things, but a few of them I've seen are pretty good, so I don't know that brand. So, yeah, send it to me. I'd love to look at it.
Mm-hmm. Hi there.
Hi.
How is your research being received by headache centers throughout the U.S., neurologists? My three children all experience migraines, and I would always find whenever I would go to a doctor, neurologist, there was never really any recommendation of all of these natural approaches. It was, especially for my one daughter, just an abundance of the medication. So I am curious how your research is being received throughout the United States.
It's actually being received very, very well. I think the reason why the doctors don't recommend these things is because, Allergan, who makes Botox injection, takes out every neurologist at least once a month for a delicious lunch and gives them prizes and trinkets and money and vacations. And I mean, this is seriously big business. Unfortunately, the ginger lobby isn't doing that. So they don't hear about it. They're not pushed to it. But the neurologists that I've talked to about this have been very enthusiastic, and there are some headache centers. Usually a dedicated migraine center will know a lot about triggers, will know about especially magnesium and vitamin B2 and some of these. Oftentimes they're very skeptical about herbs, even though there's peer-reviewed research all over the place. But they don't understand that. They think there's too many components and drugs just have the one, so they can kind of corral it better. I have found that especially our neurologist who specializes in migraine is delighted that people can talk to someone for an hour and really track down with their diaries and track down what's causing their migraines and adjust their supplement schedule to help. And it has no problem at all with that.
Hi. I had a question about the supplements. If you were going to begin to supplement magnesium, vitamin B2, and CoQ10, would you do it all at once, or can you take them all at once?
You can take them all at once, and it depends if you want to be scientific or just get rid of the migraines. If you want
That's
to be
my problem. Yeah.
If you want to be scientific about it, then you would just take the B2 and see if that worked, and then take the magnesium and see if that worked. But if you just want to get rid of the migraines, yeah, these are compatible to be taken all at once. And, several are in the multivitamins we have, the brain and body food, but several aren't. So you need to take them. And they have label directions. And I gave you numbers in my book. I have the numbers that they used in the trials. So like CoQ10, 150 milligrams, you could easily take a little more than that. It would be safe. We used 200, and that passed the ethics board. Thank you.
Hi. If you have a trigger that is intrinsically a part of you, such as hormones, is there anything you can do to prevent migraines, or are you then just left with the option to just manage them? Are there any remedies or natural remedies that could deal with the triggering effect that your own hormones have or try and mitigate them?
Well, certainly magnesium is well known to help with hormonal migraines specifically. So, be sure you take that one. It's perfectly harmless. If you take too much magnesium, it's a laxative, which, might be an uncomfortable thing, but not an unhealthy thing. So you'll know if you take too much magnesium, it's easy to tell. And it's good to take a form that's actually absorbable and not magnesium oxide or one of those awful forms. Yes, thank you.
Which form of magnesium do you recommend?
There are several forms. Magnesium ascorbate, magnesium aspartate, magnesium citrate, the bisglycinate form. There's quite a few that are excellent and quite a few that are bad. It's all covered in my book on, it's called Vitamins and Minerals Demystified by McGraw-Hill, and it's under $20, available, Barnes & Noble or Amazon or wherever like that. And then you can learn about all the good, medium, and bad forms.
Okay, our thanks to Dr. Steve Blake today for his talk on migraines. I am Bill Grant, co-chair of the Health and Medicine Member-Led Forum, and now this program of the Commonwealth Club of California, celebrating 114 years of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.
Thank you, Bill.